And joining us now is Will Wheaton.
Hello.
And you delivered that line so well.
I could tell that my saying hello really affected this audience. That's how I know that I did. I come up here and done my job.
For some reason, seeing you, I just have to ask, have you saved any starships this week?
Oh, so we're going to go there. Okay. No. Although I did take both of my kids to school 4 times and got them there on time each time. And I did successfully complete about another 3 chapters of my current book in my rewrite.
Cool.
I didn't reverse any polarities or realign any isolinear optical chips or do any sort of matter-antimatter inversion remixing, but I mean, it was only a 4-day week because of the holidays, so it was so much time.
At some level, it was, as an actor, it was... Was it unfortunate that your character got treated the way they did by the writers on Star Trek, where, you know, we need to crank things up, have Wesley save the ship? I mean, did that come personally? Was that...
Well, yeah, I mean, Wesley saving the ship is something, and it's so ironic that I'm back at LostCon talking about this, because I was here 15 years ago speaking in my defense on a panel titled Solving the Wesley Problem. A panel to which I was not invited, actually. Patrick Stewart called me from the LostCon and said, you might want to come over here and say a few words on your behalf, because they're really tearing you apart here. But, you know, one of
But it wasn't you personally. It was the
of course not, right. But even that did not happen as often as it is remembered. I mean, Wesley was in about 100-something episodes, and I think that happened 5 or 6 times. But it's so ingrained in the collective unconscious of fandom that it happened an awful lot.
And early on did it like two or three times
in a row. Yeah. The big mistake that the writers of The Next Generation made with my character was a failure to understand what happens with someone who is able to relate to his peers on a professional level but not on a personal level. They didn't tap into a lot of the things that were going on for me personally. As an actor, I was able to relate to Patrick Stewart and Jonathan Frakes, and I was able to hold my own in scenes with anyone that they put up on the set with me. But when the camera stopped rolling, they were adults and I was a kid, and I couldn't relate to them at all. And I struggled with that. I tried really hard to relate to them because I thought they were really cool. But I was a really awkward, nerdy child. And it filled me with a lot of angst, and it made me feel very uncomfortable in my own skin. And it was really difficult for me to feel like I fit in with those guys. Well, if they had managed to slip some of that in to my character in between the nanite creating and the polarity reversing, they may have been able to make the character more memorable for a wider audience.
And much more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Wesley got some really good episodes, there's no point in complaining about all of that. But a reality of The Next Generation is we had 9 regular cast members, and it was most fun to write for the robot. So that's really what a lot of them did.
Being in a role where people, unfortunately, you weren't disguised behind a lot of makeup. So people recognize you. They recognize you then, they recognize you now. And when you go in to read for roles today, are you still facing the, oh, you're Wesley?
Yeah, it's very funny what Armin said. People have a misconception in the entertainment industry that I'm either 12 years old or in outer space. And it has been extraordinarily difficult for me to make a transition from child actor to adult actor.
Well, most child actors have that problem.
Well, most child actors end up dead in front of the Viper Room. And the entertainment industry doesn't know what to do with a child actor who isn't in rehab or on celebrity boxing. And it's been really difficult for me to kind of carve out a niche for myself.
The film industry the tends to treat child actors like that cute puppy that now that it's bigger.
Yeah, right. Yeah, child actors are like the alligator that you flush.
Yeah, they are. If you look at the way they're treated, because they work really well for a few years and then, you know, go away.
Yeah, it's a very difficult life to live, and I would never let someone I love work as a child actor. It's real hard.
Yeah. After leaving Star Trek, what sort of things were you going after?
Well, I left the series when I was 18 because the producers had really gotten in between me and some film work. They had really made some efforts to prevent me from doing some film work that was real important to me. And the real last straw was when they told me I couldn't do a movie over the hiatus because I was going to be featured in the first episode of the season. So they couldn't work out the schedule. So I was forced to pass on the film, and then 1 week before production on the episode was to begin, they wrote me out entirely. And it was this very clear, like, you know, give Santiago the code red kind of message. And from that day, I made it my mission to get off the show because I didn't want to be owned by them. When I finally did leave, I left entirely intending to pursue a career in film and to go do other acting roles. But I'd been an actor my entire life. I started when I was 7 years old. So when I had an opportunity to pierce my nose and shave my head or grow a mohawk or do whatever it is that I wanted to do because I didn't have to look like Wesley Crusher anymore, I kind of went nuts. And I didn't want to go and pursue my career anymore. So instead of going and pursuing my career, I went out and pursued my life, naively thinking, well, sure, I'm a good actor, and I can take a few years off, and when I come back, I'll be ready to go again. Well, I was ready to go again, but Hollywood had moved on. And, you know, and I was relegated to sort of like that guy, you know, that's also in the room where everyone goes, what are you doing here? And I told, you know, I was wondering the same thing on my way to the bar.
And now you're writing.
And now I'm writing. A couple of years ago, I started a website for myself. It's online at willwheaton.net. And I keep a weblog there. And it's a journal about my life and my experiences as a husband and a stepfather and a former Star Trek actor and struggling actor and all of that. And after about a year of keeping these almost daily journal entries, a lot of people emailed me and said, you should really write a book. You should take this stuff and you should turn it into a book. Well, there's a program on the radio that I love called This American Life, and I think it's one of the greatest programs that I've ever heard. And there's an author named David Sedaris, who I think is one of the greatest authors of my generation. And I started hearing his voice when I wrote my stuff. And I started wanting to be on This American Life really badly. So I worked real hard to take my experiences and write them in a narrative nonfiction style. That spawned a book that is coming out in January called Just a Geek. And from that book, Just a Geek, I made some big cuts because the book got too long.
Mm-hmm.
Those stories found their way into a book which is currently available called Dancing Barefoot. I published the book myself, so I didn't have to go through the same things as a writer that I go through as an actor, which is, oh, we really like this, but, and here's four reasons why we're not going to hire you.
Mm-hmm.
And in just a few months, it's been really, really successful, and people really like it. And today, it's sitting atop the bestseller list in literature and the bestseller list in science fiction at Powell's in Oregon.
Cool.
Yeah.
As an actor, you spend a lot of your time being rejected. And that's got to be especially hard as a kid, but at any age, it's hard. How do you deal with it? How do you grow the thick skin?
As a child, my parents really sheltered me from a lot of the rejection. It is incredibly difficult to not take it personally, to learn how to just say, all right, I'm not the right actor for this job. when I go in on an audition now, I know when I walk into the hallway if I have a real competitive chance at the role or not, just by looking at the other people who are there. And then by kind of gauging the behavior of the people when I walk in, I tend to know right away whether I have a good chance or I really should just say thank you and leave. And as an adult, I can intellectually make the distinction between I got rejected and I wasn't right for the role. But as a stepfather and a husband and a guy with a mortgage, every time I get rejected, that's another month that I've got to figure out how we're going to make our budget work. And it becomes an employment reality instead of just an artistic desire to be filled. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons that I have really put all my focus on writing for the last year, because as an actor in Hollywood, you're only as good as your last thing. And if you haven't done anything in a while, people tend to forget about you. Mm-hmm. And it can be like Sisyphus, where you roll that rock up that hill and you get really close to the top, and then they hire their cousin and it rolls back down.
And then you've got to start all over again. Yeah. On the other hand, that could work to your benefit if they forget about your being a child actor.
Yeah, what's really interesting now, I'm 31 now, and a lot of the people who are in positions to hire me are of my generation. I am going in and I'm seeing people who are 28 to 35, and they're all like, I remember you from Star Trek, man, or I remember, I loved Stand By Me. I've got to find a part for you in this picture. And I'm like, yes, you do. In that case, it absolutely does work to my advantage. It's something that I really struggle with because for most people, your career really doesn't get going until you're into your 30s. You know, you spend the first part of your life kind of trying out different things and building up to it and trying to get there. For me, by the time I was 25, I'd been an actor for almost 10 years. And I'd been in an Academy Award nominated film, and I'd won a bunch of awards myself, and I was on this hugely successful series, and I was like 25, and well, where do you go from there?
It's a little early for early retirement.
Yeah, exactly. There's that's why I think you see a lot of actors go off and they go to the college that they missed, or they go and work in regular jobs that they didn't get to do, or they go behind the camera. The entertainment industry is real difficult to achieve escape velocity from. Because you get real, for me anyway, as an actor, I get really comfortable there. And I feel at home. I feel at home on a set. I feel like I belong.
Well,
on
but
a
it's
set.
Also the velvet handcuffs. You may be being restrained by them, but oh, they are comfortable.
Yes, they're nice, and she's got such a great ass. What?
Yes, but the velvet handcuffs, where the pay is good, the.
Yeah, and you know what?
You have a lot of free time. And also, when you're on set, everyone wants to make you happy.
Yeah, on Next Generation, we used to all really envy LeVar Burton, because LeVar would come in for like a day, maybe two, push some buttons in engineering, and then he was gone. You know, and we were like, we hate you. We were on the bridge till 10:30 last night doing blue screen with Les Landau. And they were like, yeah, well, okay. I got to come in, and I was like, I was out before lunch. I hate you so much.
And he didn't require a lot of makeup.
Just put
on the glasses and go.
Yeah, man. I was listening to Armin talk about, you know, having your eyes. It must have been nuts for LeVar to not have his eyes. I mean, you can't. I mean, they're covered up. You can't do it. And I was sitting down there listening to you. And I have so much respect for you guys that do that mask work. Because it is, yeah, I mean, Armin kind of downplays it a little bit. It's the hardest freaking thing in the world to be under there. It's hot. It's uncomfortable. It's unnatural. And guys like Armin and Michael Dorn and the guys on Babylon 5 who are able to take these bizarre, incredibly unnatural, uncomfortable pieces of latex and bring them to life are really, really tremendous, incredibly skilled actors. And they're so lucky that they get to take that stuff off and then go do something entirely different and nobody ever knows.
Yeah.
I had a similar who the hell are you moment with Michael Dorn like 4 weeks after I'd started Next Generation. Because he came up to my trailer and he was like, hey, Will. And I was like, who are you? Like, I'm Worf. Oh, of course you are. If you put it that way.
But it sounds like as you get older, you're acting is less important as a personal validation?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm an artist. That's what I do. I I entertain people, I make people think, I bring some sort of pause to people's life. That's sort of what I'm meant to do. And for a long time, I thought the only way I could do that was by being an actor. And over the last couple of years, when I was working in that direction, it was like I was dragging that big, heavy the stone of shame from the Simpsons Stonecutters episode behind me everywhere I went. When I would sit down to write a story, or I would write a book, or I would write a magazine article or something like that, it was like I was running downhill with the wind at my back. And my mom said, when you try to be an actor, it's really, really hard for you. But when you're writing, everything lines up for you to be successful. She said, I think maybe you're not supposed to be an actor. Maybe you're supposed to be a writer. And it was real significant for my mom to say that, because she's the one who started me down the actor's path in the first place. So I don't know. I'm still young, and I've got two books behind me and more in, I guess, pre-production. And we'll see what happens, you know?
Your mother's comment reminds me of something. A actor friend of mine who had gone from acting to being behind the camera. And he was talking to another actor, and he explained, could sense that he really would rather be on the other side. But he explained that it was sometimes just easier to ride the horse in the direction it's decided it's going to go.
That is so true.
And so maybe for you, it is writing.
And as an actor, I'm able to get into the heads of the characters I create.
And now you can use that insight when you're writing.
Yeah.
And you can still act.
Yeah.
You just don't have to...
Yeah, I just don't act on camera anymore. Now I act through words on the page.
Well, but also, if an acting gig opens up, you can take it without damaging your real job.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, just one last question.
Uh-huh.
For what you do, writing, being a husband, acting, you pick. What is it that brings the most joy?
My wife has two children, and their father has made all of our lives hell. I respect the boundaries that have to exist between me and them without trying to replace their father in their life. When I have these moments where I see that something I have done has taught them or has changed them, when I see a little bit of me in them, it's the greatest feeling in the world. Because all that other stuff, you know, acting and writing and movie making and being in television shows, it's all real fleeting, and it's all real capricious based upon the audience. But to make a connection with my stepkids is something that will hopefully last for the rest of my life. And that's what's really important to me.
Way cool. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.